Welcome back to the Period Panel, proudly supported by Active Iron.
Avril, it's great to have you on the Period Panel today.
Thank you so much.
First off, if you could tell us a little bit about yourself, that'd be great.
So my name is Avril Flynn. I'm a midwife and childbirth educator and women's health advocate. I started my own business when I was pregnant with my son. More so because I didn't want to work nights anymore. Working nights for a decade will do that to you. But also I'm really, really passionate about the education side of not only pregnancy and birth and early babyhood, but also women, women's bodies. And I would also be a big advocate for the LGBTQI plus parents who aren't really included in a lot of those, that education, and also generally for women and people to be more aware of not only their fertility health, but their period health, their the various different life cycles that we go through that just aren't talked about still enough.
And through all the work that you're doing, like you obviously cover a lot there, do you find that women know a lot about their bodies, very little about their bodies? Where are we typically on the scale?
Typically, until people either start trying to get pregnant, there is a real dearth of knowledge, a real lack of knowledge. Because unless you do or have a good secondary school biology education, which a lot of people don't even do science at that stage, people don't even know their period cycle. You know, if you got 10 girls and 10 boys and asked them at what stage of the month they could get pregnant, I guarantee you would maybe get one that would get it right.
Okay.
And there's a couple of different really interesting reasons for that, which I have kind of really kind of studied to find out where that comes from. Number one, we still have a predominantly Catholic focused education. So it is still, even though there is a curriculum, it is very much tapered depending on the ethos of the school.
Okay.
So for example, I'm a bit older than you. At 41, when I was given sex education, there were already three girls that were pregnant in my class. And basically we were told that if you had sex at all, there's a good chance you'd get pregnant, so that we wouldn't have sex. We're still going to have sex. Whereas if you actually trusted girls and women with their education, then people would understand a bit more. So generally, as you know, in a fully fertile woman's month, there is only really about 3 days in which having sex would result in a pregnancy. And those 3 days can be different depending on your cycle. But even a lot of women aren't aware of their cycles. Yeah. Then a lot of women go on the pill quite early on for various different reasons. Some to not get pregnant, some for their skin, et cetera, et cetera. So that means they're not ovulating. So we've a real disconnect with our bodies. And there is also a lack of praise and understanding of the cyclical nature and to embrace that. Like I remember, I've been going to kind of festivals since I was about a long time. And I remember when moon cups came out. And we were horrified. The thought of putting in a device into yourself to collect your menses, to collect and wash it out. And we were all like, ew, that's so disgusting. I mean, what a brilliant idea.
How amazing
that is. How environmentally friendly, you know, that was so ahead of its time.
Yeah.
So I think now people have moved on, but I still would really wonder if there were parents that were a little bit awkward. Are they talking to their to their girls and their boys? It's really important that we educate our girls and our boys alongside each other, because we only can really understand one when we know about the other.
Yeah, it's really interesting that you mentioned the parents piece, because we've definitely had that. I've met different people that have, you know, 9, 10, 11 year old children, and they don't know what to share with them. They're not sure what the education is in school. I've met parents that have said, you know, I spoke to them before the sex ed talk in school, and then I know one of the women said that her son came home and was like, Mom, you told me so much more than they told me in school. So there's a little bit of a disconnect there in relation to, I suppose, the education that the schools are offering, the education that the parents are offering. And this was somebody that obviously, you know, took the time, sat down and had a good conversation with her child. But then there's other people that would just be like, oh my gosh, I don't know what to talk to them about at all. I don't know what to share.
Take a step back from that. There are couples that wouldn't talk about periods with each other.
Yeah.
So how can you expect a dad to be like, does anybody need any tampons or any sanitary towels, or does anybody need me to refresh their moon cup or their subscription at for their period products? Yeah. Like,
it's still awkward.
Yeah. If you had a dad that would maybe open the conversation by that, they're only going to open that if they actually can have that with their partner.
Yeah.
And that's one amazing thing. If you know a lot of same-sex female couples, that's how you talk about periods. If you want to learn as an adult couple how to be in tune with each other's bodies and know, ask your lesbian friends, because they're, when you're in that couple, it's such a brilliant space in which to talk about that. And I think men folk could learn a lot about how to be open and how just to ask. Mm-hmm. And if we as adults get better at talking about it in front and not making it like
hush hush,
yeah, that it's just part, then of course the kids are going to pick up on that.
Yeah.
And go, I mean, my son is 5, and he would know a certain amount about periods. There would be on our wall at home, we have, like, I'm just very conscious of raising my little feminist, so, and raising a boy in a you know, in this sort of a world, and even at five he's a real boy, but we have pictures of just like cartoons of bums and boobs, all different sorts, and we pick out our favorite one. And even that, getting free with that he would know what a body looks like and what an adult body looks like, and what, not in any, there is no sexual element to this whatsoever. This is just normal bodies. Because how can we expect little girls to understand the changes of their own or be proud when they celebrate, or they should celebrate getting their period, as, you know, as the next stage, as opposed to be shoved in a box and, oh my God, if anyone sees my period, I will die of shame.
Yeah. Do you find there's a resistance around speaking about it with kids before they have their period or before they get their menstrual cycle? So
definitely, I think people are very, and I understand totally, we have to be really careful about at what level that we bring in periods, because as a natural consequence of that, you're going to have to explain sex. But if, I think a lot of that is more our resistance, whereas if you actually talk about it as a natural body, what you're actually doing is protecting rather than giving too much information. They're going to hear about it anyway.
Yeah.
And from much better from a holistic parent point of view, rather than Ben in school who has access to a smartphone at 8 and is looking up stuff on the internet. Like, you know, don't be silly. They're going to see that.
Yeah.
You know that they are. So how about opening up the conversation? But I mean, I'll tell you, you know, my parents were really open and really good and really forward, and like, this was the 90s. But I did not realize that you got pubic hair on your undercarriage, on your perineum, like around your perineum. All the pictures that I'd ever seen, it just showed a few little speckles of hair on your mons, so on the front.
Yeah.
And so when I got hair there, I honestly thought that I was some sort of hairy beast. And I didn't tell anyone for years. And like that is like, and it's kind of a funny story, but I mean, it caused such anxiety and stress. And if you look at the pictures, there's never, it's always a bald image. And also, as somebody that has seen an inordinate amount of vagina in my work, I can guarantee you, I've never seen a picture that actually, a woman that actually looks anything like that picture.
Yeah.
So if we can't see it,
it's like propaganda almost.
But if we can't see it, like, why are we afraid of hair?
Yeah.
Like, what is the big problem with hair? You know, the pubes or seeing pubes are still a, you know, a dirty word that we, they have to be shaved like a Sphinx cat in order to be aesthetically acceptable. So I think there's still a way to go to understand and maybe celebrate a bit more a girl's passagehood, not into womanhood, but into teenagehood, and to embrace that. And by giving girls more knowledge about their bodies and what's normal and what's not normal, we give them power, not, we're not setting them up to, you know, be with shame or that they're all going to run out and have sex. That's just not, it's just not true.
No, it's really interesting. I think just the, as you said, like from imagery to education conversation, like it can, like it can bring that anxiety for kids if they feel that they're that little bit different. And, you know, the truth of it is, like, girls are starting to get their periods menstrual cycle, it could be 9, 10, 11 years old. And, like, to be honest, like, I have a cousin and she's just turned 11, I think it's actually this week. And I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm like, she might have her period already, she might get it soon. And I, like, I remember getting my period, but I see her obviously as a child, where, you know, you don't see yourself as a child when you are 11 or 12.
No,
but
I think you are
the bee's knees. Like,
you had your little butt.
Yeah.
You know, you might have one pubic hair. It's exciting. But it is exciting. And if we celebrate it a bit more.
And just normalize it.
And normalize it. And talked about that. Like, ask her.
Well,
what is the crack?
How are you getting on?
How are you getting on?
Yeah, any questions? And that's the thing, because I've actually spoken about it as well. So I have a younger sister, she'd be 6.5 years younger than me, and I would say we probably only spoke about periods and stuff when she was like 19 18 19. But like, I could have, I suppose, been there for any questions that she had, or like
the same difference between my, funny, I have an older sister, we would never have really spoken about, but me and my younger sister, she's just like, oh my god, shut up. Stop talking about it with my
now nobody doesn't. And to be fair, I think she was on the second episode. She was on the first and second episode of the period panel a couple of years ago. So like, now it's completely open conversation. But we have a brother in the middle, and I don't know if that impacted things or what the story is. Because I know sometimes when sisters are beside each other, they can be a little bit more open and that type of thing.
But isn't it great though, the work that you're doing by even talking about this? Because I really feel if somebody is awkward, and I always feel for parents, a great time to talk to your kids is when you're driving them places. So if you're driving,
they can't get out.
They can't get out. But also, you don't have to look at each other.
Okay, okay.
So it is a great opportunity if you happen to have this podcast on.
Yeah, yeah.
To open up the conversation. And you don't have to make eye contact, because we know teenagers are just like, oh my God, shut up.
Yeah.
But it's a great little 10 minute to go, is this something that you and your friends talk about?
Yeah.
And even if they go, oh my God, shut up, mom.
You're starting the conversation, and then it'll,
and all
the door will gradually open. But
providing a safe space, and you're not doing it as a joke.
Mm.
So a lot of this is people have, kids have questions, but it's said like, you know, it's said as a joke.
Yeah.
And then the joke is associated with shame or
embarrassment. Yeah.
And that's where they're getting their knowledge from. And it's not great.
Yeah. No, that's something that I have noticed, and something that I've like reconsidered over the last couple of years, I suppose, is, you know, when people would joke and be like, oh, you must be on your period, and you hear, you know, maybe it doesn't matter, you hear a girl or a boy say it to each other, or you could hear a man say it to another man and that type of thing. And I have kind of completely checked myself and actually spoken about it with other people and been like, you know, we're actually feeding into this culture of being
embarrassed. Well, it's misogyny for one.
Yeah, so
it's literally saying if any sort of emotional anything is A, not actually a real feeling, must be tied into a menstrual cycle, and B, women are crazy. Like that, when you kind of dig down to the psychosocial elements of that, that's the narrative.
It's
gotten thrown as a compliment.
Yeah, no, never. But yeah, it's just like, honestly, like when you actually start talking to other women and other people about that, they're like, oh, okay, yeah, that does make sense. So, you know, it's something that will take a long, long time to, you know, remove from language, but we can do that, and we can, like you said, you know, bring in a bit more positivity and that type of thing.
The difference when I speak to, I'm 41, the difference when I speak to my 31-year-old like friends, or my sister who's a couple years older, and what they talk about, and then 20-year-olds, and then even my 11-year-old, is amazing. So in a short period of time, we can move mountains.
Absolutely.
Move mountains by education, by non-shameful and non-embarrassed talk, by keeping the conversation open and honest. And I always say, there's no stupid question. Like, and because...
But we've been, like, I think, everyone feels there is a stupid question. We just have to keep saying it.
I'm sure somebody else has told the story about when NASA sent the first female astronaut into space.
They sent loads and loads of tampons.
Tampons. Oh, like, these are some of the...
Smartest people
in the world. But that is how little they understood about female. Is that mind-blowing?
Yeah.
And if you took a section of the male populace, I don't think things have moved a huge amount with regards the boys.
Yeah.
So that's why we need to educate together.
In terms of where people are gaining their knowledge and information, have you, you know, unearthed where they are picking up this information? Is it mostly online? Is it conversations together?
I mean, I think we have a huge, and not to try to bring the conversation to sexual element, but we have to be aware that young kids are getting so much information online.
Mm-hmm.
So Instagram, and also looking up really unsuitable porn. I've done some research in it, an Irish-based research, and I think, you know, you're talking like 11, 12. Mm-hmm. There's a very good chance that you will have been exposed to something. So if you're seeing total hypersexualized female identity, and I mean, in my day, we had one Judy Blume book that mentioned, like, there was no actual magazines, there was no porn, there was nothing. I think if there had been, I definitely would have looked at it. Because you're a kid.
Curious. Yeah.
So that stuff is out there. And I think parents kind of have their head in the sand with regards it. And also stuff like Instagram filters. You know, in my day, when you left school and went home, you got to kind of escape all of those pressures. But now, even from a young age, kids are online all the time and they're communicating with each other all the time. And there is an image conscious element. And they're not all the same thing, but they are all connected. And I think we as adults need to be asking more. So we need to be asking, what are you looking at? What are you seeing? What do you think about that? Do you know that that's not normal? There's a really interesting group of studies that says that young brains are the neurons, everything is being formed. So if you expose a young brain to any sort of porn, they become desensitized incredibly quickly, which means that they have to watch harder core stuff to be stimulated. So imagine if they're watching this just for a short amount of time. You are having teenage boys and girls with sexual problems. That's crazy, because they're looking at highly sexualized images that don't relate to the real world. That's happening.
Absolutely.
Psychologists are seeing much more issues with people having erectile dysfunction, you know, in their 20s, which is unheard of. And because of that,
that's really interesting, actually.
So we need to be honest about, what does a normal body look like? What does a normal sexual body look like? What does normal sex look like? And what should that, you know, what should that be about the conversation around consent? And that all leads on from, what does a normal body look like? So if you don't know about pubic hair or what your period is, and you're then watching this
will choose just the
disconnect would be mind blowing. And you know, your frontal lobe is still forming. That is why teenagers are so brave, because they don't have the fear that we have as adults, but they also don't have the ability to sort out real, not real. We're the adults. We need to do that. So they're going to see it. We need to talk about it much more honestly and be much more open about what they have access to.
And do you find still that there is that kind of shame and embarrassment? I know you mentioned earlier about the Catholicism in the country.
Of course there is. I mean, we still, you know, when you think of how far we have moved, it's amazing. But my mum didn't have her own PPS number. She had a W and my dad's. Okay. She had to give up work when she got married. That was the 70s. That's only, you know, two generations.
50 years
ago.
Yeah.
That's crazy. So you know, we have moved very, very far, but there is still 90% of the schools, primary schools in this country are still have a Catholic build. And I am not saying that that is, you know, that is bad. But what I'm saying is we can't change the education or ethos if the conversation is still rooted in a shame-based society.
Mm-hmm. And a lot of other things have moved on. Like, obviously, like you're talking about the progression of technology and that type of thing. And we can't just ignore that those things are happening and that the exposure to different things online is happening.
Totally.
It just doesn't match the education.
Or that our kids, just because your kid doesn't have a smartphone, that they're not seeing it. Because
somebody else
is. Somebody else will.
Yeah.
So if you're not having the conversation, so if you don't talk about bodies and periods with your partner, so with parent and all of your children, and of course the first couple of times will be awkward, how the hell will your kid come home and say, I saw something really disturbing on Timmy's phone today. I don't understand what it was. It looked horrible and violent, and they said that that was sex, and I don't understand. How are they going to say that to you? Like, how terrifying would that be?
Yeah, no, they'll just bottle it up. And
they'll bottle it up. Or they will think that that is normal. And then that there's an expectation they should do that.
Yeah, yeah.
And then we're harping on about consent. And what...
They just don't match. Like,
mixed messaging, unless we're really honest with what actually kids are seeing. And horribly, one of the only things to understand that is, go Google yourself. Like, I have to say, you would be knocked sideways what is two clicks for free. I am talking like the really disturbing stuff, and like the bodies don't look real, and the violence is it's all hyper. So we're trying to talk about normalizing period talk, but there are kids that haven't even had their period that are seeing this kind of so we need to be really honest to protect our kids. Talking about bodies and periods and pubic hair and body changes is the
part of the conversation.
Is the basic.
Yeah, yeah.
Because from that, we open up the conversation to much more complicated things. But if you don't have a basic understanding of your anatomy, of and a pride in your anatomy, and a pride in your body, and also a privacy around your body, knowing that it is yours to use and to show where you like, but that how can you move on then to other conversations?
In terms of the education, I know that you had said before that you had discovered you had endometriosis much later in life. Could you first off tell us what endometriosis is and then share a little bit about your story? And this, I know, absolutely feeds back into the education, the conversation and everything as well.
So endometriosis is a really interesting disease, and it's only really starting to be studied. So a simple way to describe it is there are cells that grow inside your womb called your endometrium. And these are the cells that are shed with your period.
Yeah.
And cells similar, not the same, but similar to this, for some reason, grow on other parts of your body.
Okay.
So it can grow on outside of your uterus, outside of your womb, on your cervix, on your ovaries, on your intestines, on your lungs, on your spine. Right. Even so, it can grow anywhere. And with your monthly cycle, those cells break down.
Okay.
And can cause pain and can cause scarring and cysts. Mm-hmm. The problem is it's really hard to diagnose. On average, and this is awful, it takes 9 years before somebody is diagnosed with endometriosis. I wasn't diagnosed until I had surgery for something else. I had an ectopic pregnancy, and it was discovered in the ectopic pregnancy that I had really severe endometriosis. I had thought the pain that I had always suffered with my periods, I thought that was normal. I thought I was just a little bit of a wuss and that I didn't handle pain as well. And like, think about that. I didn't handle pain as well. Like, periods should be uncomfortable, but if they are painful, that should be investigated. Like, if you are rolling around the floor, if your period is stopping you, in your normal daily activities, that should be investigated, because that actually is not normal.
Yeah, yeah. And that's part of the thing is being able to have conversations with friends, with you know, with your mom or your sister, something like that, to have those conversations.
And what's a happy period?
Yeah.
You know, like, I didn't know.
Everybody's version of a heavy period would be different.
Well, if you talk to a lot of men, it's like a hemorrhage. But like, but no, but some women don't realise, you know, soaking through your four-dot pad every couple of hours, that's an incredibly heavy period. Okay. That also means that there's a very good chance you're going to be low in iron. And that might exacerbate how you are feeling month to month.
Yeah.
So again, when are we taught this? Never.
Yeah.
And that to me is bizarre, because as women and girls, or people with uteruses, we are all going to have periods for a huge section of our life. How do we not know this?
Yeah.
How are we not teaching?
That's the thing. When we do our workshops in schools and in clubs, we encourage the girls to talk to each other, to talk to coaches,
what do
to
you
talk.
Find have you been kind of blown away by? Is there? I mean, am I wrong? Is there? Is it better than I think it is, or do you think it's getting there?
I do think it's getting there. I know, like, we do workshops with kind of, usually it's kind of 11 and 12 up. We're doing a lot of kind of secondary school, and then I suppose if we're in a club, sometimes you know, the 11 and 12 year olds will join the groups. That's mostly what we're focusing on at the moment.
Yeah.
There is still a bit of awkwardness, you know, among the girls, and what we do is, like, you know, I would share some of my experiences in terms of having my period. I'd share the kind of advice pieces that I have. So
yeah,
in terms of, like, tracking your cycle, whether it's using a diary, whether it's using an app, whatever it might be, and just talk about it as if it's normal. And then, depending on their group, they can start kind of asking questions or maybe sharing their experiences.
That's
and that type of thing.
Though,
so
that they are asking questions.
Yeah.
And, like, ultimately, if we don't start having these real conversations, it's going to be another, you know, we're not doing our sisters any favor.
Yeah.
Because why it takes so long to diagnose endometriosis is there is such a lack of understanding of a normal cycle. That's the problem.
Usually what we would find is once you actually start speaking about periods and menstrual cycle and that type of thing within a group, within a squad or a team, and then sometimes, like, with the school classes, you open the conversation, you kind of open the door for them, and then they kind of realize, like, oh, well, my friend here is going through the same thing as me. And we talk to them a little bit about, like, if you are in a lot of pain, you know, check with your friends. Are they having the same experience? Is it different? Go to a doctor and see if you can find out some more answers. So trying to just bring in that confidence for them to have conversation, to empower themselves. I suppose, like, a big thing for us would be the, like, instilling the confidence that you can be involved in sport and PE and all of those types
of that. And, like, the importance of saying that there are days within your cycle that you will feel slightly more able or stronger. And that's normal.
Yeah, yeah.
And to be able to say to a coach, or to understand your own cycle, to be able to say, hey, coach, I'm just not, you know, on my best.
And you have to track it to understand.
Exactly. The only way you actually understand it, because I still always laugh with my friends. And I mean, I am so conscious and aware. And I, you know, there will be a day that, you know, I will just not be having a great day. I'll get my period the next day.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, there are days, and there are physiological, that is not a bad thing. It just means there are days that you are more suited to different things. But the fact is, you know, the statistics of girls dropping out of sport altogether, and puberty is directly linked to it.
Absolutely.
For a variety of reasons. But, you know, I look at my 11-year-old niece, and myself and my sister were talking about this, and we were never that sporty. But we also weren't really encouraged because we weren't great at it. And my niece is 11, and we had to, my sister said, you know, she had to really do a bit of self-talk to not put on her daughter trying to protect her in case it didn't work out or whatever.
Yeah.
That she actually just encouraged her to go for it. The amount of self-confidence, the friendships, the enjoyment.
Mm-hmm.
Her dad was saying to her that, because she has brothers as well, the conversations that girls and teenage girls are having with each other on the field. And, you know, that was brilliant. What a brilliant, you know, the
encouragement
and the peer support and joy that they're getting from that. What a great fight back against Instagram perfect to get mucky in a field with your friends.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, how brilliant, you know, if we're really talking about empowering our young girls and women, we do that by making them feel strong and empowering themselves. And there, I do not think there is a greater avenue than encouraging all girls of all abilities to stay in sport. But to do that, we have to make space for that.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the big thing at the moment, I've been loving seeing, you know, I'd never seen a World Cup that there has been, I didn't say Women's World Cup, that there has been a World Cup starring women that, you know, that everyone is talking about there, you know, and I just think that that is the stuff that move mountains, because if you can't see it, then how are you going to be it?
We're delighted to be working with Active Iron for season 2 of the Period Panel. I myself have been taking their supplements for over a year and have had a really positive experience. One of the best things about Active Iron is the fact that it's so gentle on the stomach. So now let's dive back into the Period Panel.
In relation to what you're mentioning about yourself and your sister and the experiences that maybe you guys had, but being conscious to not pass that on to the next generation is really important. And that's something that I would always try and do when we go and speak to the teenagers, because just because I've had an experience doesn't mean that they're having the same experience. And obviously what we're trying to do is keep moving the dial.
100%.
You know, make it a better experience for them. But I found that with different women, like, they're, whether it's not being encouraged, whether, you know, there was only 2 or 3 sports available in their local area and they just weren't sports for them, or whether they dropped out because they were worried about body image or their menstrual cycle or whatever it might be. I am finding a lot more women that are like, you know, actually, I am sitting down and watching the football with my kids. I'm putting on the women's football, or I'm watching athletics, or just like all these different sports. And they are showcasing and profiling the athletes for their kids. And they're like, oh, I'm not maybe massively into it myself, but I know it's important to give them the exposure and let them become interested. And where women are putting in the effort and have noticed and realized that maybe they weren't given the opportunity to be involved in the sports society,
that's
the sports
the thing.
Culture, they're changing it, which is great.
Talking about is, if a lot of mums haven't been involved, they mightn't see the importance of it, you know, whereas, you know, dads might be very encouraged to bring the sons, but, you know, bring the daughters too, that's just important. And just down to schools, you know, if you look at what schools would, you know, a girls only school would invest into PE in comparison to a boys' school, there's a big difference there. And, you know, if you don't meet a teacher or a coach or a trainer or a parent that's passionate,
it's hard to grow with your own passion.
It's hard to get passionate about it, you know, unless you are exceptional and have an exceptional need or want. That's the minority. What we're talking for, you know, no matter what your ability, you can gain so much.
Oh yeah, beyond winning and losing, like.
But only if there's given time and space to that growth. And unless it is prioritized in the same way that other educational things are, then we're doing everybody a disservice.
Going back to the endometriosis,
yeah.
Can you tell us a little bit how that impacted your life? Am I right in saying that that kind of contributed to sport and PE and that type of stuff as well?
It would have done, in that, you know, when I look back and I think that I was just like, in my head, I was just a bit of a wuss. I mean, I had a horrendous, I would have had incredibly heavy period for at least 7 days, sometimes 10. When my cycle was very short, it was about 26 days. So that's a huge amount of time.
Yeah.
And there, you know, we talk a bit about period poverty. Thank God I had a mum and, you know, dad that would buy me period products. But, you know, I look back on, you know, there were a group of us in school that were, you know, had our period like twice a month. Like, that's the truth. And for a lot of them, there weren't free access to tampons. And I look back now and remember particular instances, but, you know, you're not aware.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, there were definitely instances where things happened that I know those some girls still remember, that there were period accidents. Because if you didn't have a conversation, weren't able to tell your parent that you had your period, how would you get them to buy period products?
Mm-hmm.
Which is crazy to me how, you know, how that would happen.
Yeah.
But for endometriosis, perfect, you know, your period is heavier. It's usually more common, and it also causes an enormous amount of pain.
Mm-hmm.
So when I realized I had endometriosis, I also thought it had deeply affected my fertility.
Mm-hmm.
Because what happens with endometriosis over a long period of time, you get scar tissue and various different bits of your anatomy end up sticking to the other bits.
Okay.
So it's not great. So I was incredibly lucky to actually get pregnant with my son, Felix. And then I actually ended up having surgery because my endometriosis got so bad that I was having basically 2 weeks on, 2 weeks off. So having 14 days of bleeding, and 10 of those days would have been rolling around the floor in agony.
Yeah.
And also my iron was through the floor. Like, it is just not a sustainable way to live.
Mm.
It's so I ended up having surgery. But there are loads of people that don't even know that that is not normal.
Mm-hmm.
So if you have a period that is longer than 5 days, and if it is really, really painful, go get checked out.
Mm. And for you, since you discovered it, what has the change been?
Well, the thing is, you know, since I had surgery, I did not realize that I was living with daily pain.
Mm.
That I will never forget waking up from the surgery and just going, oh God.
Hmm.
Like, I had a feeling in heaviness. You adapt, you don't realize.
Yeah, yeah.
But I mean, it was affecting like my day-to-day life, even when I wasn't having my period.
Yeah.
Because the damage was so extreme because of all the scar tissue. My pain was on the daily.
Yeah.
And was chronic and was really, really severe. Mm. So to not live with that pain was so liberating.
Mm.
Like, amazing. And one of the ways I have dealt with it, and it's not for everyone, is I had a Mirena coil inserted. So I now have a very, very light period.
Okay.
Very occasionally. Now, that's not for everyone. And to be honest, I would much prefer for myself, particularly at my age, because I'm perimenopausal, to just go au naturel. But for me, it's just not an option, because
yeah.
if I did, I would be back. I can't go back to that pain again.
Yeah.
Like, the thought of it gives me shivers. And my heart goes out to all the people. I know how much that hurts. Mm. And also being told it's all in your head or it's not
yeah.
bad. Like, it's diminished a lot of the time. Mm. And that takes so long to get diagnosed.
I know you said that you discovered it when you had surgery for something else.
Yeah.
Had you talked to doctors much about it?
I mean, I was a midwife working with...
Yeah, I remember you telling me that before.
No, I hadn't really.
Yeah, okay.
It was very much me.
Wow, okay.
No, I hadn't.
So really, for people that are listening, and I know we try to encourage it with everybody, but if it is something that is excruciating, that is impacting, like, raise a question.
If you are crippled with period pain, that is not normal.
Mm-hmm.
If you are vomiting with period pain, that is not normal. That is not normal pain.
Okay.
And so periods are uncomfortable and occasionally a painful cramp. But if you have a couple of days where it is deeply affecting you, there are things that can be done.
Yeah.
You don't have to suffer in silence,
mm.
whether that is correct pain relief, whether that is acupuncture, whether that is further investigation. Do not suffer in silence. Mm. Because it will end up affecting,
yeah, absolutely.
Not only your sporting life, but your life.
Oh yeah, no, everything. You're talking about it, like 14-day ones
and some every
work, like all aspects of life. And I think that's what.
And we accept it.
Yeah,
we are tough as nails, and women and girls are the strongest, most adaptable, ultimate power machines. We're not taught that, but it's true.
Yeah,
and we get on with it.
And talk to me a bit about, you mentioned that you had a lot of blood loss. Like, talk to me about the, like, impact that would have on your body. Like, did you experience, yeah, so, like, a lot of fatigue?
One of the places I work with, I hope I don't want to move to them, are Active Iron. So when I was pregnant, I took iron. And one of the reasons was I discovered that my iron was quite low because of my endometriosis and everything that had happened, that I'd lost a lot of blood. And over a long period of time, it's very easy to become iron depleted.
Mm-hmm.
When we think of iron loss, we immediately think of anemia.
Yeah.
But actually, iron depletion happens over a long period of time. And it is reckoned that 1.2 billion women and kids suffer with iron, low iron stores.
Okay.
And about 40% of any cohort of women probably have low iron. Isn't that crazy?
Yeah, it's a huge statistic.
So iron depletion affects everything. It can make you feel tired.
Mm-hmm.
It can affect every element of, and something like traditionally iron supplements were kind of worse than having iron depletion.
Yeah, they would. Some of them can
make you feel very constipated.
Yeah,
and make you feel very bloated. Whereas active iron, it's actually designed in Ireland, and this is the crazy thing: because iron depletion, because low iron, affects way more women than men. There just wasn't a lot of research into iron. Isn't that crazy?
Mm.
But that's really common with healthcare. Whereas
I think you should share the statistic on the
we're talking about 90% would be spent on male centric to about 10% women centric, which is crazy.
That is changing. 50%, you know, I know it's not exactly 50. I think there's slightly more women in the world, but it's
51%, yeah, which is amazing because we're more necessary.
And then
10%
of the research is
going to... The thing is, and you know this in your work, it's because the decision makers are generally white, heterosexual men. So that they're, you know, if you make decisions about stuff that affects you. Mm. So if we have more conversations like this and more women in power and more women in sport, then we look at the healthcare issues that specifically affect women more.
Mm-hmm.
And as I said, we're just good at getting on with it.
Yeah.
And that's not a good thing. It's amazing and it shows our strength. But you know, there's a reason that the patriarchy likes to keep us in our place, because if you actually gave us the power that we have, we will rule the world today. Anyway, as people. But what I'm saying is, with regards iron, you know, there are 40% of women walking around that have no idea, and that when it is over a long period of time, it gets cumulatively worse. If you can take a multivitamin, taking a multivitamin that has iron in it is no good.
Mm-hmm.
You need to take a multivitamin like Active Iron Women that has a multivitamin with everything that you need and a separate iron supplement, because iron is absorbed further down in your tummy.
Mm-hmm.
And if you take a normal iron, it gets oxidized in your tummy, and that's what gives the side effects.
Okay.
Whereas this basically doesn't get broken down until the place where it's absorbed.
Okay.
So you avoid all of the nasty side effects and get all of the benefits, and clinically proven as well. So they did research on a group of women who self-reported that they had difficulty taking iron. Those women were able to increase their iron stores by 94%, which is incredible, and maintain it as well. And there were huge increases in their energy levels and in their general health and well-being, which is amazing. So that was even better than we thought it would be.
Yeah.
And you know, there has to be, you know, to make claims, make sure it's clinical evidence.
Yeah.
And that's why I'm so proud of this product. It's Irish, it's designed for women, and it's clinically proven as well.
And to be honest, I've never heard anyone that has had a negative experience with it. Like, all I've heard is positivity surrounding the brand, which is really good, because, you know, as we've mentioned earlier, sometimes people, when they are taking other supplements, have had negative experiences. So,
and you know,
not that there won't be side effects for some people,
it's ameliorating. And I always say, you know, if you're going to invest in a supplement, things make claims, but do your due diligence.
Mm-hmm.
Something that has the power that it claims, there should be clinical evidence to back it up. Because, you know, anything can claim anything. But, you know, that you might just be wasting your money. So make sure whatever product it is, that you do your due diligence and don't spend your money on something that isn't worth it, basically.
And talk to us a little bit about the work that you do with Active Iron.
Yeah, so I've been really, really lucky. So how I got interested in it was I took it and I just couldn't believe that there was a product that you could take in pregnancy that didn't have all of the nasty side effects. Low iron is incredibly common in pregnancy and is exacerbated by several things. Firstly, you might know that you've low iron going into it. Second of all, we check for the iron in your blood, but we don't check your iron stores.
Okay.
And we don't check again until late in pregnancy. So between your first blood test and your second blood test, it is so common for women to drop. Once it's dropped, diet alone cannot replenish your iron stores. And your the amount of iron that you need to take in pregnancy doubles, and in some stage is triple the amount, and is basically impossible to get from diet alone.
Yeah.
So taking a supplement is kind of a must, but a lot of the supplements that don't cause side effects actually don't do anything for you.
Okay.
So iron in liquid form is no good, I have to say. Because the reason that it doesn't have any side effects is it's not actually being absorbed, and the bioavailability of it is rubbish. So if you're taking a supplement, make sure that it has good bioavailability. And if you have babies close together, again, your iron will be depleted heading into your next pregnancy.
Okay.
So while it might be fine with your first, you might have low iron stores. And when you think of symptoms in pregnancy, tiredness, low iron. We associate some things that might be one with the other. And for postnatally, so what I describe as the fourth trimester, the healing, iron is so important for wound healing, for your immune system, for building yourself back up. And you naturally, when you have a baby, you're going to have a blood loss. But we often really concentrate on baby and we forget about ourselves.
Yeah, yeah.
And we know that with regards postnatal depression, there's a huge link between low mood and low iron.
Okay.
So ensuring that you have make sure that you're continuing to take your iron supplementation right throughout your pregnancy, preferably before, during and after, that is going to lessen the chance that you're going to run into some issues that are very, very common.
And we've mentioned some of the other statistics. I know that there has been some really interesting research that Active Iron have carried out.
Yeah.
So one of the pieces of information is 67% of people struggle with heavy periods, 64% say they experience menstrual fatigue, and 40% are unaware of the link between menstruation resulting in tiredness and fatigue. So we've obviously mentioned endometriosis, we've talked a bit about the general population, we talked a bit about pregnancy, but what about, you know, these statistics here? Like, how important is it to make sure that we are getting sufficient iron?
Well, the funny thing is, how often in health do women get their bloods checked?
Yeah.
The weird thing is, often the first blood test that you might ever have, unless you're a blood donor,
yeah,
is in pregnancy.
Yeah.
And how crazy is that?
Yeah, I'm thinking, like, from a personal perspective, like, I've probably had my bloods done like 3 or 4 times and I'm 29.
Yeah. So you know, and fatigue with period, I'm tired, I have my period, but what if
we think it's normal, like?
There is a certain amount of tiredness that you can have, but fatigue, it's not normal. And what if it was actually your iron stores? Isn't that crazy? So if you could take a supplement that actually took away the fatigue part, yeah, you would get a little bit tired still.
Can you explain to us a little bit of the difference between fatigue and tiredness? Like, how do you identify which it is?
So it's obviously very subjective. It's different for everyone. But for example, if you know, it's normal that you might sleep a bit heavier, but if you were considering being too tired to go and train, that's fatigue.
Okay. So if it's impacting your ability
normal
to do things,
or you want to do things.
So even, you know, getting up for work, or like if you just find you're exhausted,
that is fatigue. Okay. Okay. Exhaustion without a specific cause.
Okay.
So you've played a match, you're going to be fatigued, you're knackered. But if you're tired before you play the match,
yeah. What's causing you to be?
Yeah.
Okay.
And we don't tend to investigate ourselves in wellness. We just are like, oh, I'm really tired at the moment. Why?
Yeah.
If
And that's part of, you know, going back to tracking and understanding your body. So understanding your menstrual cycle, noting down the different.
And as I said, so we get really good at getting used to
feeling a certain way.
Yeah.
And obviously from your experience with endometriosis, like if you're talking,
sure, like here's an
agony.
But here is an expert who thought that was normal.
Yeah,
which is crazy. So if I do that, then how many other women are going around going, just feel knackered all the time? And also the link between having, so iron is the oxygen carrying capability of our blood. So if you have low iron, you are not reaching your potential. For God's sake, that's what blood doping is. Like that's what, you know, cheating in sport is actually trying to do the opposite with, I was watching a Lance Armstrong documentary, I'm all about this. But that thing in your blood, EPO, erythropoietin, which is natural, is what your red blood cells do. Iron makes red blood cells. So you are not going to be at your even semi-peak performance unless you know that you have enough iron in your blood. With active iron, even if you don't know, it won't increase your iron to a negative level.
Okay.
So that's one thing that's really good. So there isn't a downside to it in that you might be, you know,
We're supplementing.
Exactly. You can't over supplement with it.
Okay.
Because like a key in a lock, it will only absorb what your body needs.
Okay. Yeah. No, I think that's actually really
interesting for you to say.
For people to know, because I know that there is sometimes concerns that people are over supplementing and that can be negative as well.
But I just think for all women and girls, there is no harm the next time you're at your GP, get a little blood test done, because even if it's perfect, isn't it great to have a baseline? Because then if you are feeling fatigued, you have something to guard against. And there are lots of different times in our life. You know, there are lots of different impacts that we can have. But, you know, it is amazing to me the amount of people that I talk about. The first time they got their bloods done was when they were pregnant.
Yeah.
And you're pregnant, so there's already a different, there's different biome.
There's now a true comparison then.
Exactly.
Because it's...
Just, you know, let's look at ourselves in a much more holistic sense. If we want to maintain our sporting lives, we need to maintain our health and healthy lives. If we want to be as healthy as we can, we need to start understanding our biological natural functions and how that impacts on us on a day to day. How do we do that from the very start?
Yeah, I do have one question. So I put up a question box for our audience, so let me just pull that one up there and see what the question was. How long can it take for periods to revert after miscarriage? 2 months post miscarriage, still off sync. That was the question.
Firstly, I am so sorry to that person. Pregnancy loss, another thing that we don't talk a lot about, is really hard, both heart wise, head wise, but also body wise. There are a lot of reasons why it can take a number of months for your body to go back into sync. But the most important thing is that you're having a period afterwards. But remember, however long that pregnancy was, your body wasn't ovulating for that time. So your body is basically starting again.
Okay.
So it can take up to 5 to 6 months to get back into a regular cycle. However, it's a really good idea for that person for their own, and the reasons for that can be physical, but they can also be psychological because of the trauma. It's a really good idea for that person to link in with their GP to get their day three bloods. So day three bloods are to get on day three of your menstrual cycle and day 21. And what that does is it just tracks, are the levels of your bloods showing that you're ovulating?
Okay.
And that you're ovulating and that you're having a luteal surge. So basically that, are your hormones working as they should be?
Yeah, yeah.
To that there is no hormonal reason why you mightn't be able to start trying again. When we have a miscarriage, we want to usually try and start again straight away. But sometimes psychologically, our brain needs a little bit longer to catch up. And that can be a reason as well. So basically, total reassurance. Your body will get back to itself. For your own reassurance, go to your GP and get your bloods done. and to know that I'm just really, really sorry for your loss, and take all the time that you need, and just be really kind to yourself and let people in. Tell people about what's happened so that they can understand your anxieties and what you're going through.
Absolutely.
And sending huge amount of love and healing to that person.
For sure. Thank you so much for your insight on
us. It's been so lovely. Thank you for having me.
Yeah. No, it's been brilliant. Like, that's, thanks for taking a question from the community, but also, of course, all of the insight that you've shared. It's been really interesting.
Thank you so much.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of the Period Panel. Thanks for listening. Be sure to connect with Her Sport across all of the social media platforms, particularly on Instagram, because we'll be putting up a question box before we shoot every episode. Our episodes will be a combination of athletes and health experts, and we'll direct your question to the person that's best able to answer. We hope to see you again at the next episode of the Period Panel.